Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 78. And Dave, a little Pro Bowl yesterday. It looked like Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown had never met. I mean, what was going on with Ben in the rain and trying to get the ball to AB? I mean, I know most people probably didn't even watch the Pro Bowl, but I was kind of amused at the difficulties that those two guys seemed to have yesterday.
Woo! How about that Pro Bowl? How about the comeback, David? What a thrilling game! I was on the edge of my seat from the fourth quarter on. I couldn't sit still. I just absolutely no. I did have to watch. People say, why do you watch that? Well, 9 Steelers involved. The Steelers coaching staff, of course, coaching the AFC side. Yeah, I had it on. Yeah, I kind of live tweeted it, if you will. Once again, the game actually did get a little interesting in the fourth quarter. Ben Roethlisberger, of course, did start the game, 7 of 13 for 50 yards and an interception, and that interception was by Harrison Smith, kind of a forced football in the middle of the field to Antonio Brown, picked off and then, of course, returned the distance for a pick six. And you're right, he did. It looked like he and Antonio Brown had never met before. He threw, targeted Antonio Brown 6 times in the game and only had 1 completion to him for 3 yards, and that first completion was the first pass that he threw to him, and that was it. The timing all seemed off, but you know, hey, it's a Pro Bowl. There were some trick plays. Most of the trick plays happened when Roethlisberger was in the game early. They had Marquise Pouncey at center, David DeCastro at right guard, and Alejandro Villanueva opened up as the right tackle. You had Roosevelt Nix in the game some at fullback, Le'Veon Bell, of course, at running back, and Antonio Brown at wide receiver. At the end of the first quarter there, especially after that pick six interception, Roethlisberger was out of the game, and I think Antonio Brown was out of the game for the remainder as well, and that was probably a sight good to see in the minds of Steelers fans, especially with all that rain going on and whatnot. The rest of the game, you know, Roosevelt Nix had a couple of conversions in short yardage areas. Le'Veon Bell had a couple receptions there, and really that was it. On the defensive side of the ball, Cam Hayward saw quite a bit of playing time on defense in his first career Pro Bowl. Had a handful of tackles and a sack in the game, and you know, that was about it for him. Chris Boswell had a 41-yard field goal to give the AFC the first points with about 43 seconds left in the first quarter. He then hit 3 extra points, and obviously the last extra point was the one that put the AFC ahead for good. And, of course, the final 24-23, Von Miller was the defensive MVP because he had a late sack in that game of Jared Goff that really essentially sealed the win. And Delanie Walker, the tight end from the Tennessee Titans, was the offensive player of the game after catching 4 passes for 29 yards and 2 touchdowns. And that's your AFC recap in a nutshell.
Okay, that'll wrap things up for us today.
Yeah, thanks for joining the Pro Bowl Depot podcast.
Look, one of the things is always what kind of effort are guys going to put in this game, and you know, you're trying to figure it out. And what I thought was good, there was kind of a common ground where, particularly when they were running the football, if a guy got stood up, you know, the ref should have blown the whistles a little quicker. They obviously had to come to an agreement that if a guy gets stood up, he's not going to kind of continue to try to drive for yardage. And at the same time, defenders aren't going to take guys to the ground. look, it's a, you know, it's a difficult situation. Nobody wants anybody to get hurt. I'm sure you saw Juju's tweet out there. He said, you know, if you guys are going to go half speed, you know, I'm ready to, you know, give me a call. I'm ready to go full speed. Easy to say when you're 21 and sitting on the sidelines and want to be in the Pro Bowl, but you know, there's a reason behind all of this stuff. And you know, you go back all the way to the way back when. Who was it? Dave, Robert Edwards, the running back from the Patriots, and the day before tears his knee up out in Hawaii, playing in the sand. Guys have gotten hurt in the Pro Bowl. Guys have gotten concussions in the past, and you just, you know, nobody wants that stuff to happen. So I don't think anybody takes it too seriously, but there was some level of effort there that I thought was reasonable. But man, Ben looked terrible. AB didn't look great. You know, the quarterbacks in general, you know, again, the weather was terrible as well with the driving rain, but it was kind of amusing.
Yeah, and look, you know, if it's obviously the worst of the all-star games in the major professional, you know, sports, without a doubt. I mean, you and I growing up, David, it was a lot different game in the late 70s and 80s when it came to the Pro Bowl. I mean, it was actually a hard-hitting game, but over the years, obviously, that, you know, it's loosened up, and now it's become more of a fourth-quarter game. I mean, look, there were guys like in Gwakwe and a few other of those young kids that were played in this game that they must have missed the memo, because they were going full out in this thing, and that is good to see. But on the flip side, you don't want to see anybody get hurt. There's really, you know, and you and I have talked about it several times over the years on this podcast, there probably really is not a happy medium outside of raising the prize, you know, continuing to raise the raising the prize, right? You know,
yeah, the money. Yeah, $32, $60, $64 for the winners and $32 for the losers. Yeah, so there's, you know, it's real money to you and me. That's real money to those guys. Some of those guys are making less than $1 million. So, you know, everybody likes to get a check.
Yeah, and maybe that's what's you know, if they raise that up a little bit more, you know, for the winners or whatnot, you know, maybe you'd have a little bit more competitive, you know, or for four quarters have these guys, you know, giving more full effort. But then on the flip side, you're going to have the refs doing, like you said, the quick whistles and everything as far as that goes. But, yeah, look, I mean, like I said, you know, we watch it because, you know, Steelers are involved in it. God forbid, should anything happen, we have to be able to kind of report on that, you know, instantaneous there. But it was an entertaining game, especially in the second half, I thought. Obviously, the Steelers players didn't, you know, offensive skill players didn't show out or anything. But at least nobody got hurt, and at least nobody's calling for Tomlin to get fired today for him not having
going for it on fourth down a bunch of times.
Oh yeah, why wouldn't you? I mean, was there even any punts in this game?
I don't think they were talking about the AFC punter Kern. I don't think he punted. He only held.
Let's see. One punt return for the AFC in this game. So there was evidently only one punt.
Yeah, the only punt return, I think Tyreek Hill, that was the one I think he muffed, and I don't even remember. They didn't get the touchdown, but I think they got the ball and staked the NFC to that early lead. Okay, we've probably covered enough of the Pro Bowl, but yeah. So the larger comment in terms of, you know, games in the past, yeah, it was competitive when we were kids, and then I think we had a long period here where it was a complete joke. And I think yesterday, if there is a happy medium, they found a little bit better of the happy medium. Well, where guys were competing, but it wasn't a, you know, the hitting was limited. So you know, they'll do what they do with it. But I, you know, I do remember the past couple of years just after the game. I think rightfully people were like, they shouldn't even play this game. It's a joke. And it wasn't as much of a joke yesterday. So, okay. Let's talk Le'Veon Bell, Dave, because since you and I spoke last Monday, what I have found interesting, you know, I think that the topic here is that there are discussions about the Steelers and Le'Veon Bell coming to some kind of long-term agreement. And they put out this date, which is the beginning of the franchise tag day. I think it's February 20th. And what surprises me here, Dave, is if Le'Veon Bell didn't sign the deal last year, like, you know, he had the $30 million kind of opposite. The numbers that we think were offered were something like $30 million in the first 2 years. And, you know, he signs a five-year deal at something, you know, in the neighborhood of $13, $14, $15 million a year. What's different about this year?
Yeah, you know, and those reported numbers at the time, as you said, 30 million over two, and what was it, 42 over three, was it?
There were never numbers released by the Steelers or I think by Bell's agent, but you know, somebody leaked something that those are the best guesses of what we have.
Yeah, and I think the overall consensus was that the average yearly value over the life of the thing was probably $12 or $12.5 million, right? You know, just slightly more than his franchise tag. Really, the first 3 years of that thing is the only thing worth, in my opinion, looking at, because you know that's where you draw the line after 3 years, where a player is generally, you know, cuttable. At that point. Now, for agent purposes, and when talking about average yearly value, they of course use the entire new money amount of the deal divided by the amount of new years and all. So it probably would have been classified as a $12 or $12.5 million deal there. It obviously wasn't good enough for him. He didn't sign it. And you know, now the question becomes, you know, what, like you said, what's going to be different this time around? The franchise tag on him is $14.54 million. You would think that, assuming he got to a point where he got the tag, that would, of course, be the starting point for the average yearly value. And you remember, he's been talking about that. He's had that $15 million per number in his head for quite a while now. So I just, you know, I don't know where, because Adam Schefter before the Pro Bowl yesterday threw water on Le'Veon Bell's and his comments from last week, stating that he's already had contract discussions with the Steelers and a lot further along than the two sides were last year. And according to what Alex Cazora wrote up on the site yesterday, the fact of the matter is the two sides have not had any contract discussions recently, Schefter said. I think the Steelers would like to re-sign, and he would like to be back in Pittsburgh. But the fact of the matter is they've made zero discernible significant progress. They're in the same spot they've been in with Pittsburgh, hoping to keep him and hoping he'll stay, but no progress right now between the two sides. And, you know,
They talked about it on the broadcast. First of all, by the way, Matt Hasselbeck, not good. He should not be in the running for that job. But, you know, he was talking about Bell, and Bell, you know, talking to the running backs at the Pro Bowl about how he's going to set the bar for them and take them all to this new level, and they're all rooting for him to get the big number. But, you know, it just goes back to what we were talking about. If you know, Devonta Freeman's making, $8.25 million, and he's the second highest paid back. I mean, look, we saw Adrian Peterson make $12 million in his heyday with the Vikings, but if you're going to get 80, 90% of the production from other guys at, you know, 1/15 the cost in a salary cap league, is that what you want to do? And it just, would the Steelers offer the same deal again after Le'Veon Bell has 400 touches and he's a year older? And, you know, the reality is look, he's an elite player. I don't want to, in this conversation, somehow come out as disparaging Le'Veon Bell. But as we talked about, as you've written, as Mike DeCourcy in the Sporting News wrote, you know, he didn't have a lot of long runs this year. He had a lot of unsuccessful runs. He didn't average, you know, he caught 85 passes, but he didn't average, you know, he averaged, 7.7 yards a catch and 4 yards a carry. You can get some level of that production much cheaper other directions. Now, having said that, what's the right number? Because if it's $12 million for 3 years, I would imagine the Steelers will sign up for that yesterday. But if it's $15 million for 5 years, I don't think the Steelers are signing up for that. And what's Le'Veon Bell going to take, and where does it go, Dave? I don't know. I'm just surprised after last year that they're back at the table. I just never thought it would get there. I thought it would either be tag him or don't, but there's no chance of a long-term agreement. I think we both thought that.
Yeah, look, he is a great back. He's easily top 3-4, and one thing that we don't have stats for is his pass protection, and he is probably the best pass protecting running back in the league. Would you agree? I mean, if not, he's number two probably.
Yeah, he's excellent at doing it. He's great.
And you know, the other, obviously he did have a down year statistically in some of those other areas, but you know, he is still a top back. The thing is trying to put a number on it, and what it's, you know, can you replace that, all that he does, with two players is the big question. And look, obviously the Steelers want him to remain in Pittsburgh, and I think Bell wants to remain in Pittsburgh. Now, how much of what he said was just him trying to throw it back in the Steelers' lap, you know, saying, oh, yeah, we all would, to make it look like if this thing doesn't get done by February 20th, then it's all on the Steelers. And really, does it even matter him saying that? Because I think most of us thought that if the Steelers, you know, were wanting him to stay at least one more year, they were going to throw the franchise tag on him anyway. And in my opinion, he would help his negotiation, by forcing them to put the franchise tag on him. I've obviously come 180 on this whole thing. You know, earlier in the season, I thought, man, they probably not going to franchise him. Maybe they're going to let him walk. I've come to the other side thinking that, you know, they'll probably at least put the franchise tag on him now. But the flip side is I will be somewhat shocked if they get a deal done before February 20th. And on the flip side, if they do get a deal done, I just don't see how you can justify, you know, paying him, you know, an average yearly value of more of $15 or $15.5 million. And even to get to an average yearly value of $15 to $15.5 million, you would think over the course of the first 3 years of that deal, it's going to average like, you know, 17 or 17 and a half or something like that. Man, that's, and look, generally when you talk about Steelers and these contracts for non-quarterbacks, you know, they usually get the large signing bonus right up front, the base salary, and usually that's only the guaranteed money in the deal. Now, they will put roster bonuses in the next 2 years that are due, say by the fifth day of the new league year each year. That gives them a couple of outs on there. And for all practical purposes, a running back or any player for that matter is likely to earn the full first 3 years of a mega contract, barring, you know, them just falling off the cliff or getting injured or something along those lines. But I mean, we'll see. I mean, I got to give Le'Veon Bell, or at least the way his comments were presented by, I think, Jeremy Fowler, ESPN, he sure made it sound like it's going to be, like there's a good chance this thing's going to get done by February 20th. And like I told Alex in the show the other day, I believe him for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's different than everything we've talked about and everything we thought. So you would think, Jeremy, the way Le'Veon Bell was talking, you would think, you know, sources, reasonable sources within the organization are suggesting that they want this to go that direction. Look, you're paying Antonio Brown $17 million. You're paying Ben $20+ million. You've got a lot of money tied up in your offensive line, at least a couple of the positions. You know, you got to do work on the defense. I don't know that, you know, just best use of dollars at $15+ million. I don't know that I see that.
Well, you know, look, we got to go back to this thing, and look, they were ready to give him $30 million over the first 2 years last year. By putting the franchise tag on him 2 years in a row, they actually get out cheaper
Right. Which I don't understand where this is going. I don't understand how Le'Veon Bell turned the deal down. He turned down last year. Look, now he succeeded in the sense that He played a year injury free, and he banked, you know, 12 point whatever million dollars. So he's a, you know, he gets another crack at it with a higher starting point if the Steelers want to tag him. But if I'm the Steelers, are you even offering him the same deal you offered last year? He's got 400 more touches under his belt.
Yeah,
I can't imagine the deal they would offer this year would be more than they offered last year.
I think it will be because of the franchise tag amount, personally. You know, after all that we went through last year for Bell to take another five-year deal at, let's say, $12.5 million, I mean, what did he accomplish, you know?
Do you think a deal gets done with – do you think a long-term deal gets done now?
I like the chances of it a lot better than I did 8 weeks ago, David. I think he will be a Steeler one way or another in 2018. You know, whether or not it's the tag, I'll still be, like I said, I'm going to be mildly surprised if they're able to hammer out a deal before February 20 or before. And look, I mean, the February 20th to March 6th is only what, 2 weeks time or whatnot, you know? So I will be surprised, mildly surprised they are able to work out a deal with him prior to having to place the tag on him. Now it would be great. It would be absolutely great if they were able to, because, you know, the start of the new league year is obviously not long after the franchise tag date. And it would be a lot better having, Le'Veon Bell, you know, wear a much lower, tag price in 2018 than the $14.54 million, tag number. It would probably prevent you from doing, maybe a contract restructure in there as well too, because remember, once he gets that tag, that's the number that counts against your salary cap. Whereas if let's suppose they gave him an $18 million signing bonus, a $1 million, base salary in 2018, and if you took that $18 million and divided it over 5 years, that's 3.6, and then add the, you know, the million to it, you're at about a 4.6 cap number. Now, obviously, I would try to make his cap. I would try to get Do you need to clear that much overall, I guess, is what I'm saying. Could you give him a little bit higher base salary, in other words, to try to lower that second and third year cap hit? You know, that's a conversation for another day. But the long and short of the conversation is if you did get him signed to a long-term deal prior to putting a franchise tag on him, you could save yourself, let's say, $8 million in cap space, just a rough number thrown out there, and even, you know, probably even a little bit more than that, depending on how the thing is structured there. And like I said, that would potentially help you save on doing a restructure. I don't know which way this is going to go, David. I really don't. All I can think I know at this point is that I think Le'Veon Bell will be with the Steelers in 2018.
So was there any further clarification about him missing the walkthrough on Saturday before the Jags game?
Yeah. That's something. And look, remember when we talked about this, I said, you know, do we know all of it? And you know, if it comes out that something else comes out, then, you know, we probably need to, you know, post or talk about some sort of retraction. Now, he claims that he had a personal situation and that the team knew about it.
So was it excused, or
that's the way I take it, you know.
So then the question is, why did somebody within the Steelers organization feel a need to leak that and leak it the way they leaked it? I mean, were they trying to disparage Le'Veon Bell for contract? I mean, look, you know, the only people who are going to be in the negotiating room are the Rooneys and Kevin Colbert and Bell and his agent. So what would be the purpose of having a PR blitz on that if you're going to let him go? I mean, maybe that's it. If you're not going to go to the table, then you leak something like that. But it just the whole thing now seems odd. And because of Bell's situation and somewhat of Bell's history, it's just, you know, that somebody would report that story probably from a source within the team just seems weird.
Yeah, and he claims this is from Kevin Patra of the NFL Network. Le'Veon Bell says he had personal reasons for being late to walk through, and coaching staff was aware. This was at the beginning of the week when he showed up at the Pro Bowl in Orlando there. So I had personal reasons, Bell said on Wednesday, according to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Obviously, Coach T and everyone knew. Whoever made the report was trying to make me look bad to the public or whatever. Obviously, the coaches and everybody knew what was going on in my life at that moment. I showed up when I did, and I came to work.
So it sounds like a non-event.
Sounds like a non-event.
And, you know, nobody's putting anybody's performance in the game based on, you know, Bell being there for a walkthrough on Saturdays. We know that, you know, things have happened in the past. Eli Rogers, had an incident and, you know, so, okay, so now we move forward. And do we think Le'Veon Bell's a good citizen?
A good teammate?
A good guy in the locker room. I think he's a good guy in the locker room. I think his teammates like him. I do think that. And he's had a couple missteps. But, you know, on level of concern for Le'Veon Bell, mine's relatively low of him having incidents or being a problem.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's an okay teammate as far as teammates go. And especially after he gets this deal, I'm probably not going to hear too terribly much about him except him dropping his rap albums or whatnot.
Right.
You know? You know, as far as the past drug incidents, you know, drug test, whatever, I would think and hope he's past that now. You know, I think he was not using his head, and some other players maybe tell him, look, you can get past this, and everybody does it. We're jumping off the bridge. Come jump off the bridge with us. And he was more of a follower than he was a leader, I think. With that said, would I be shocked if Bell failed another drug test? Well, probably not. I mean, but overall, am I concerned about it? No, I'm not. And I'm not concerned about him being a quote unquote bad teammate either. Now, if he wears this franchise tag all off season, he's certainly going to be framed as such, because if he's given a franchise tag, why would he take a different route than what he took last off season?
No, you wouldn't. You would do nothing different. The only thing that, you know, potentially happens to him is then the Steelers go in the draft, and let's just make a hypothetical. They draft a running back in the first round, and if he hasn't gone in and signed that franchise tag, they can pull – this is what happened to Josh Norman, right, the cornerback with Carolina. They pull the franchise tag. Now, all of a sudden, he's a free agent. There's obviously advantages to that because he can negotiate with everybody. But, you know, that's the scenario where – you know, and maybe he would find that to be an appealing scenario. All of a sudden, instead of negotiating with one team, he gets to negotiate with 31 teams.
Here's the thing, too, when you talk about negotiations with him right now. Does it sound in the ballpark that if he were to get a deal that averaged, let's say, $15.5 million, that he would get $18 or $19 million in 2018?
I would think I would just look at Antonio Brown's deal and you know, think about the Steelers. If you wanted to say they were going to pay the high end, you just structure it the way you structured Antonio Brown's deal. And I can't remember exactly what he got up front, but he got something in the 20s, right?
He walked away. I mean, it was his first year take, obviously, was incredibly high, too. But, I mean, it wasn't uncommon for the way, you know, the Steelers like to structure those kind of deals. Now, on the flip side, though, I think Antonio had something like $4 million that was remaining on his old deal at the time. But Antonio received a $19 million signing bonus.
Right.
and I think a first-year base salary just short of $1 million. So
yeah, so that's, I mean, so you maybe Bell's numbers aren't quite, but that's how you would structure it, right? You give them the signing bonus, you have a low first-year salary, and you go from there. So
right. That's why I threw out the $18 million signing bonus and $1 million base salary first year.
Yeah, so that's where we are. We'll see if it gets done. Again, it just seems odd to me.
Here's the thing. By using those numbers, though, okay, let's say $19 million, he stands to walk away on a long-term deal that averaged, let's see, $15 million. Let's say he walked away from the table this year or with a first-year earnings of $19 million. All right, what's 19 plus what he earned last year on the tag, 12.12? What are the two of those two together? Right, and how much did he stand to make reportedly over the first 2 years of the deal that he was offered from the Steelers last year?
Yeah, $30 million. I mean, this is why none of it makes any sense to me. I mean, I just can't believe he turned down the deal last year. And if I'm the Steelers, I fail to see, if you're the Steelers, what you learned this year that would make you offer a 26-year-old back, whatever he is, why you would offer a better deal than you did last year when he had a pretty good year. He stayed healthy, but he now has, 400 more touches in his, in his career. It just doesn't make sense to me how it went down last year and where it's headed this year.
We'll see. Like I said, the way the quotes were framed recently with him, he sure did sell it to make it sound like. And then, of course, you have Adam Schefter come out and reported what he reported yesterday.
It's odd. Why would Bell say, we're in negotiations, and Schefter say, they haven't spoken? I mean, that, again, all these things don't add up to me.
Yeah. All right. We'll find out soon enough. We got less than a month here on it, but I'll end it this way. I think he'll be a Steeler in 2018, and I'll be mildly surprised if they get a long-term deal worked out by the 20th of February.
Yeah, I think as you said 2 weeks ago, both of us said there's no chance of a long-term deal getting done because it doesn't make sense if you turn it down once that the Steelers go high. Okay, so we've killed that topic.
Rodgers. One thing we didn't hit in the last show. Eli Rodgers and I don't think we did. Torn ACL in that game against the Jaguars. Now you go from a guy that is going to scheduled to be a restricted free agent. Do you even put a tender on him? Do you put the 1.9 or whatever right of first refusal tender on him now at this point, or do you just go ahead and let him go? Because I think we would agree, and maybe Melanie can chime in on Twitter on this. I think he'd be pushing it to even be ready by the start of training camp right now.
Yeah, I mean we've seen. You go back to Adrian Peterson, who recovered in 6 months. We've seen 9 months. I mean, each guy's going to be a little bit different. 9 months puts him at, roughly the start of the season. Eli Wright, ironically, had one of his better games there against Jacksonville, did some nice things. Certainly, I think in all facets, a disappointment coming off his 50-catch season the year before. He loses justifiably. Juju got more playing time. Stepped in there, but I still think Eli Rodgers is, look, if Eli Rodgers is your fourth receiver, you've got a productive fourth receiver. And even though everybody wants to fixate on the one fumbled punt against the Bears, I think Eli Rodgers is also a capable return guy. So I think he has value.
Would you go ahead and put give him the low tender that, that's obviously assuming he was able to pass a physical by the start of the season, I would assume you'd be able to cut him,
Right. I don't see why not.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out there. All right, Darius Heyward-Bey, is he going to what are your thoughts on Darius Heyward-Bey at this point?
We play our game with the three guys again, William Gay, Darius Heyward-Bey, and Arthur Motes.
Well, Arthur Motes is not under contract. I think we'll both be shocked if he's back, right?
Right. Arthur Motes is gone.
You can make an argument that Gay won't be a salary cap casualty in the coming weeks, but there's no guarantee that he'd make the final roster type of, because it's not like he's killing them cap-wise.
Right. I have the same situation. I mean, look, are you keeping a guy around to play 10 special teams, the special team plays a game? Look, as an emergency fill-in, he can play receiver, he can block. He's going to be a good effort guy. And so I guess it's just a question of, do you have roster spots? So, you know, Eli Rogers is going to be, let's say Eli Rogers is healthy and makes the team as the fourth receiver. You've got those two other guys on the practice squad. If you draft a receiver in the late rounds, you know, these guys are all going to be competing. You know exactly what Darius Heyward-Bey gives you. He gives you max effort. He is a speed guy. He can make a play for you if necessary. If, you know, a receiver went down during the game, he can be on the field and be capable. So I don't know why you wouldn't invite him to training camp. But, you know, if there's a younger, more talented guy, then that guy's going to make the team, obviously.
There's a lot of optimism about Tucker, who spent the year on the practice squad there. And what do you do in Martavis? I mean, if you keep Martavis in 2018, what is his snap contribution going to be? I mean, you know,
I don't see them dealing Martavis Bryant, so I fully expect him to be, on the field for 70% of the snaps in 2018.
That much? 70%?
Yeah.
I guess.
Is he this year 60?
What was he this year?
65.
There were some games though where he wasn't getting a lot of, you know, he wasn't getting a
You're right. Maybe he was lower than that. I mean, is Juju going to be? Look, if it's a three wide receiver set, you know who your three guys are. And I guess if two wide receiver sets, you're going to be probably splitting time depending on game situations and play calls or whatever else. But Juju's going to be on the field a lot, and I guess maybe both of them. Maybe Juju a little bit more, but 70 to 55, something like that.
And how's his attitude going to be? I mean, Martavis.
Yeah, well, he said he now wants to be a Steeler. That's
61.8% of all snaps.
Yeah.
Do you think he has? And he missed one game, right? Due to being sat down.
Right.
That sounds
right to me. That sounds like the right number.
And Juju played 63.8% of the snaps, and that was after kind of a little bit of a slow start. And then he also missed one game, actually two games, right?
One with injury and one with the suspension.
Right, two games. So 60, I don't know. And as much as the Steelers like to run two tight end, I would think Martavis being right around 61 to 62. You know, maybe 5% is probably ceiling for him. Next season. If that's the case, he's not going to be happy. I guess what I'm getting at is, I think I would, if I could deal him for a fourth round pick, or would you deal him for a fourth round pick?
I don't think I'd do it. I'd live with him for another year. I expect the Steelers to take a receiver in the later rounds, but I'd live with him. I'm living with Martavis.
Yeah, that's going to
be. We did see kind of him play some of his better football toward the end of the season as well. You just hope you got something to build on now.
Yeah. And here's the thing. You stand to the guy, the bottom three of your wide receiver depth chart, Eli Rogers, Darius Heyward-Bey, and Justin Honor. There's a great possibility that at least two of those guys are not on your 2018 53-man roster. And
Did Hunter sign a one-year deal or a two-year deal?
It was just a one-year deal, and I mean, there's no sense whatsoever to bring. I mean, if you want to bring him back to camp as a body on another minimum,
he's not getting a deal.
Yeah, he no special teams value. Looked lost at times out there. Just, you know, it's time to move on from that. And I think we kind of have talked about this a few times now. I will be shocked if the Steelers don't draft another wide receiver within the first five rounds this year.
Yeah, they got, you know, needs on the defensive side of the ball, and what are they going to do at running back? But, yeah, you would think, you know, the offensive side in three positions that you know, offensive line's not a need, quarterback's not a need. So you've got wide receiver, tight end, and running back are the three positions that you're going to look at on the offensive side of the ball.
Are you sticking with your three tight ends?
I would bring McDonald back for another year, yeah, at, you know, $4 million, whatever the number is.
Yeah, I'm with you. And you know, I guess if you could find an upgrade over Grimble in round four or five,
maybe. Grimble's at risk, I think, this offseason. Yeah,
right. And they did re-sign him to the future a 1-year deal, you know, exclusive rights deal already. So he's back up under contract for 2018. But you know, there's no guarantee he's going to stick. If you could find something round four or five. And you thought maybe that was an upgrade over him, then I think you go that direction.
All right, what else we got?
Well, what do you, you know, are you addressing offensive line at any point during the draft?
No.
If you do, I think it's round six or seven, right?
Yeah, you got, look, they got needs, man. They got needs, you know, inside linebacker, outside linebacker, safety. It's not high priority.
Is Mike Mitchell going to make it to the start of the new league year?
Yes, I think he will.
I think he will as well too. There. Okay. Well, it seems like there was one other topic I wanted to hit on today, David. Bud Dupree. Yeah. I'm going through each of the Steelers sacks from last year, David, and I'm putting them into context as far as high quality sacks and, you know, not high quality sacks, if you will. And I just did Bud Dupree, all six of his, the other day, and I don't know if you saw those, but I think you can make an argument that maybe one of them, one of those six were high quality ones. The other five, not so much. Where are you at on him right now? And obviously, you could put the fifth year option on him, and as long as he doesn't get injured, you could cut him before the start of the 2019 league year, and be done with him. The only downside to doing that is you would not get any compensatory pick value whatsoever by cutting him. Now, we've seen in the past teams like the Jets with Quentin Coples, teams like the Washington Redskins with Robert Griffin III that gave the player, picked up their fifth-year option, only not to end up carrying it. Now, when it comes to the Steelers, now of course we only have, you know, a short history of this with the 2011 CBA. You know, to me, are you going to place a fifth-year option on a guy with the hope that this?
Yes, I think you will, because Bud is a good enough athlete. Look, I was a huge fan of the way he finished the 2016 season. I thought we were going to get great things out of Bud Dupree this year. Didn't obviously happen. Now, we can talk about how the Steelers are using their linebackers, whether these edge guys are being used in coverage too much, and what Bud brings to the table in coverage. But the fact of the matter is he's got to be able to, if you play that position for the Steelers, the priorities are you got to be able to set the edge in the run game, and you got to be able to rush the passer. And we have not seen Bud, just with the athleticism he has, we have not seen a repertoire of pass moves, or even just a speed move that he's able to consistently pull off. So I think that they've invested in him. I think they will put the tag on him. But, you know, he's gonna have to have a better year.
You mean the fifth-year option, yeah.
Fifth-year option, yes.
And once again, for those listening, that amount would be roughly around $9.5 million, and it would be for the 2019 season. He's not going anywhere right now. Look, I mean, his speed rush is about all he has right now. He just has not shown anything as far as being able to initial moves or counters. Now, he did let a couple of sacks get out from underneath his hands, you know, probably about a good three of them that maybe he should have had this year that were ultimately cleaned up. There was one in the Cincinnati game, one I think in the Detroit game as well. So he, you know, he very could have easily had, you know, maybe closing in on 10 sacks had he finished all of them, but he didn't finish all of them, and he had six, and you look at all six of those in right in order, and they're not overly impressive. They did not pick up – now, they've only had one player so far that they have not picked up the fifth-year option on, and that was Jarvis Jones. But Bud Dupree's a better player than Jarvis Jones. I think I don't think you'll get much of an argument out of anybody. The question is how much – better of a player is he than Jarvis Jones. Okay, with all this said, even if you pick up, I mean, would you entertain an edge rusher in the first two rounds of this draft?
You have to go inside first. So, and I think you have, look, I've said it since about the middle of the season or since Shazier got hurt. The depth of inside linebacker is a joke, and the Steelers, the coaching staff should be held responsible for that in terms of evaluating their season. If you're willing to go get a guy off a couch and play him in front of the guys that you have as ostensibly the backups, then you're not prepared for the inevitability of, you know, injuries coming in. And we know Shazier has, you know, he has a bit of a history of being injured. This was the longest streak he had gone of playing consistently. So, you know, I'm mystified by the whole handling of the inside linebacker position over the past couple of years, how they handled Vince Williams and Sean Spence a few years back and the game situations they used those guys, bringing Sean Spence in this year and playing him ahead of L.J. Fort. And even when Spence was immediately, you know, right off the bat in the Ravens game, looked terrible and never really improved from there. So, you know, that has to be your first priority. Now, can they get any of these guys in free agency? Yeah, but again, you know, you got to manage the cap space and everything else. So to me, first priority of the team is inside linebacker, and I think safety has to be. I would think safety is a high priority. Now, would you take an edge rusher that you loved in the second or third round? Sure, I don't see why not. You can play a rotation with some of those guys.
Will the Steelers address the inside linebacker position with a moderately priced, affordable player in the first 3 weeks of free agency, in other words, ahead of the draft?
They should. They should have a veteran, and they should draft one in the first round. I mean, yeah, you know, you gotta go find. Look, you know, Brown last year was the guy. They obviously looked at Hightower, and that didn't happen. But yeah, Zach Brown would have been the guy. Find Zach Brown this year.
Yeah, I agree. I think they should try to do something along those lines with a 2 or 3 deal on one of these guys, moderately priced. Because, I mean, Kevin Colbert has a history. Look, they're going, regardless of what happens, they're going to address the inside linebacker position. And I know we joke all the time when Colbert talks about, oh, best player available, but it just so happens magically that that the first round, yeah, that it intersects need. We know that this team, or we think we know that this team is going to draft an inside linebacker within their first two picks. Okay, the question is, I mean, you can't guarantee that guy X is going to be there though. You know, that fits for you. That's why I think it. I think that's why you see Colbert go into drafts with James Harrison signed to a long-term deal just in case. You know, having James Harrison under contract did not prevent them from drafting T.J. Watt in the first round. Okay, signing Justin Hunter did not prevent them from getting Juju Smith-Schuster in the second round. But he always has a way of trying to at least cover up, with loose sand, some of these holes, and that's why.
They didn't do a good enough job of it this year. Clearly,
right. But we both expect them within the first couple weeks of free agency to go get a Zach Brown type player, right?
Yes.
Because you just can't I don't think you can go into the draft. I think your hands will be tied a little bit too much. Because, I mean, look, is the inside linebacker class ever all that? I mean, and is that guy that can step in right away going to be, there's no guarantee that guy.
Roquan Smith's not falling to 28 or wherever the Steelers are.
Well, we don't never say never. I learned to say that about this draft. I mean, we don't think he is, and you know whether or not the Alabama the kid out of Alabama falls as well too, and is the Alabama kid athletic enough to be that guy? But regardless, I mean that's one of the several things that we're going to be looking at during the offseason here. And for those that you missed it, Alex Cazor put up kind of a first mock. For the site up, and it's a Senior Bowl mock draft that revolves only around players that he thinks the Steelers would have interest in that played in this year's Senior Bowl. So that's a good kind of starting point. We'll be pumping out our draft profiles starting this week as well too. So please stay tuned in that for that. David, I don't have anything else, so I think we'll leave it until Friday. And for those that want to follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot, follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. You can, you can email it. I just said email the show. You can donate by going to SteelersDepot.com and hitting that donate button up right navigational bar. Boy, you just got a lot of static in your line, David, so I think it's a good time to say goodbye.
All right. As always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.